I saw the hopeless, the helpless Cherokees arrested, dragged from their homes, and driven at the bayonet point into the stockades. And in the chill of a drizzling rain on an October morning, I saw them loaded like cattle or sheep into 645 wagons and started toward the west. This is a true story, my children. One can never forget the sadness of that morning. Chief John Ross led in prayer, and when the bugle sounded and the wagon started rolling, many of the children rose to their feet and waved their little hands goodbye to their mountain homes, knowing that they were leaving them forever. Many of these helpless people did not have blankets, and many of them had been driven from home barefooted. On the morning of November the 17th, we encountered a terrific sleet and snowstorm with freezing temperatures, and from that day until we reached the end of the fateful journey, on March the 26th, 1839, the sufferings of the Cherokees were awful. The trail of the exiles was a trail of death. They had to sleep in the wagons and on the ground without fire. And I've known as many as 22 of them to die in one night of pneumonia due to ill treatment, cold, and exposure. Among this number was the beautiful Christian wife of Chief John Ross. This noble-hearted woman died a martyr to childhood. She gave her only blanket for the protection of a sick child. She rode thinly clad through a blinding sleet and snowstorm and developed pneumonia and died in the still hours of a bleak winter night with her head gently resting on Lieutenant Gregg's saddle blanket. I made the long journey to the west with the Cherokees and did all that a private soldier could do to alleviate their sufferings. When on guard duty at night, I have many times walked my beat in my blouse in order that some sick child might have the warmth of my overcoat. I was on guard duty the night Mrs. Ross died. When relieved at midnight, I did not retire, but remained around the wagon out of sympathy for Chief Ross. And at daylight was detailed to Captain McClellan to assist in the burial, like the other unfortunates who died on the way. Her uncoffined body was buried in a shallow grave by the roadside, far from her native mountain home. And the sorrowing cavalcade moved onward. Being a young man, I mingled freely with the young women and girls. I've spent many pleasant hours with them when I was supposed to be under my blanket, and they have many times sung their mountain songs for me, this being all that they could do to repay my kindness. And with all my association with Indian girls from October 1829 to March 26, 1839, I did not meet one who was a moral prostitute. They are kind and tender-hearted, and many of them are beautiful. The only trouble that I had with anybody on the entire journey to the west was a brutal teamster by the name of Ben McDonald, who was using his whip on an old feeble Cherokee man to hasten him into the wagon. The sight of that old and nearly blind creature quivering under the lashes of a bull whip was too much for me. I attempted to stop McDonald, and it ended in a personal encounter. He lashed me across the face, and the wire tip of his whip cut a bad gash in my cheek. The little hatchet that I carried in my hunting days was in my belt, and McDonald was carried unconscious from the scene. I was placed under guard, but Ensign Harry Bullock and Private Elkanah Millard had both witnessed the encounter. They gave Captain McClellan the facts, and I was never brought to trial. Years later, I met Second Lieutenant Riley and Ensign Bullock at Bristol at John Robertson's show, and Bullock jokingly reminded me that there was a case still pending against me before a court-martial and wanted to know how much longer I was going to have the trial put off. McDonald finally recovered, and in the year 1851 was running a boat out of Memphis, Tennessee. The long, painful journey to the west ended March 26, 1839, with 4,000 silent graves reaching from the foothills of what is known as Indian Territory in the West. And covetousness on the part of the white race was the cause of all that the Cherokee had to suffer. Ever since Ferdinand de Soto made his journey through the Indian country in the year 1540, there had been a tradition of a rich gold mine somewhere in the Smoky Mountain country, and I think the tradition was true. At a festival at Echada on Christmas night, 1829, I danced and played with Indian girls who were wearing ornaments around their neck that looked like gold.